Okay, let's unpack this. Have you ever heard whispers, maybe in health and fitness circles, about compounds that could potentially help your body, optimize things, build muscle, shed fat, maybe feel younger?
Right, but without directly injecting, say, synthetic hormones.
Exactly. And that brings us straight to today's deep dive, HGH peptides. Now, it's really crucial we get this straight right away. We are not talking about injecting synthetic human growth hormone itself.
No, definitely not. The focus here is completely different. It's about compounds designed to stimulate your own body's production, its natural release of growth hormone.
So our mission today is to try and cut through some of the hype, explore what these peptides actually are, based on the sources we've looked at, what benefits are being reported.
And crucially, what are the risks? Because there are risks. We need to place it all in the context of the wider health conversation.
We've been digging into research papers, articles, and also listening to what some notable voices in this space are saying.
Yeah, and what's really interesting is how these compounds try to work with your body's own signaling. It's not just adding something foreign, it's trying to tweak the existing system.
So when we say HGH peptides, it's not just one thing.
No, it's a whole group, actually. Different molecules, but they all kind of aim at the same target, telling the pituitary gland in your brain to release more of its own human growth hormone. They're called secretagogues.
Secretagogues, fancy word.
It just means they stimulate secretion. Basically, they encourage release.
Okay, so they're not adding the HGH, they're just knocking on the factory door saying, hey, make some more. How do they do that? What kinds are there?
Well, the sources generally split them into two main types based on how they work. First, you've got ones that mimic your body's natural release GH signal. These are the GHRH analogs, growth hormone releasing hormone analogs.
Okay, like copies of the natural key.
Pretty much. Examples are things like spironolactone or CJC1295. They act like a direct release more GH message to the pituitary.
Got it. And the second group.
Those are the GHRP's growth hormone releasing peptides. This includes compounds like GHRP2, GHLP6, epomorelin. These guys are a bit different.
That's so.
They interact with different receptors. Some of those receptors are also linked to hunger signals because they mimic a hormone called ghrelin.
Ah, the hunger hormones.
Right. And they also do something else important. They help suppress somatostatin. Somatostatin is basically the body's natural brake pedal for GH release.
Okay, so the first type presses the gas. The second type presses the gas and takes the foot off the brake, maybe using a slightly different route.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, it hits it from a couple of angles.
It makes sense why people are interested then. HGH itself, as the sources point out, is involved in so much stuff we care about, right?
Absolutely. Cell regeneration, metabolism, building muscle, losing fat, bone density, even skin elasticity, sleep quality. It's a major player.
And our natural levels tend to decline as we age, so the idea of giving them a little boost, it's appealing. Very appealing.
Exactly. The promise is using your body's own system, aiming for a more, let's say, physiological effect compared to just flooding it with synthetic hormone from the outside.
So let's look at the reported benefits. The sources seem to suggest a lot of the early work was, well, foundational. Lab stuff,
Oh.
animal models.
Yeah, a lot of in vitro and animal studies initially, but there is more human data coming out, especially for compounds like spironolactone and CJC1295. Often, though, it's in studies for specific medical issues, like actual growth hormone deficiency.
Right, not necessarily for general enhancement in healthy folks,
Yeah.
but what benefits are consistently showing up in the successful data?
The main one, the core thing they seem to do reliably is increase that natural HGH secretion. And it's not just a flat increase.
What do you mean?
The sources emphasize it boosts the pulsatile release. Your body naturally releases HGH in bursts, often tied to sleep or exercise. These peptides seem to amplify those pulses.
And why does that matter, the pulse?
Well, it seems the body responds better to those natural rhythms, like waves instead of a constant stream. It might be how the receptors stay sensitive, perhaps.
Okay, interesting. And by boosting these HGH pulses, what effects are reported downstream?
Well, things like promoting muscle growth and strength. This happens partly because more HGH leads to more IGF-1.
IGF-1, insulin-like growth factor 1, that's the messenger guy, right?
Yeah.
Does a lot of HGH's work.
Exactly. HGH is like the CEO. IGF-1 is like the manager making things happen in the tissues, especially muscle. Supports protein synthesis, lean mass.
Makes sense. What about body composition? fat loss.
Yeah, that's often cited too. Aiding fat loss by enhancing lipolysis, the actual breakdown of stored fat, and maybe improving overall metabolism. Recovery is another big one.
Faster recovery from exercise or injuries.
That's the idea. Better tissue repair and regeneration because of that HGH-IGF-1 boost.
And you mentioned sleep earlier.
Mm-hmm.
How do they connect?
Well, good sleep is already prime time for natural GH release. The sources suggest these peptides might enhance sleep quality, maybe leading to deeper, more restorative sleep.
Which then could create a positive feedback loop, potentially.
Yeah.
Better sleep, better natural GH release.
Exactly. It's a potential virtuous cycle if it works that way consistently.
What about the whole anti-aging angle that always seems to come up with HGH?
That seems to be framed more as a result of all these other potential benefits combined. You know, maybe improve skin elasticity, better bone density, just feeling more vital overall because tissues are functioning better. It's all potentially linked back to healthier GH levels.
I remember seeing a detail about CJC 1295 specifically. Something about it lasting longer.
Yeah, that one's known for being long-acting. Sources mentioned studies showing sustained increases in HGH and IGF-1 for potentially several days after just one injection because of how it's modified.
That's quite different from, say, Sirmolin.
Very different. Surmerlin is much shorter acting, closer to the natural GHRH pulse. And then there's apomorlin, which often gets highlighted in the sources.
Why is that?
For being more selective. It's reported to stimulate GH release without significantly bumping up cortisol or prolactin levels.
Yeah. And avoiding cortisol, the stress hormone, is generally good, right?
Definitely. You don't want chronically high cortisol. And prolactin can cause other hormonal issues if it gets too high. So a peptide that primarily just targets GH release is often seen as, well, cleaner, I suppose, more targeted.
That selectivity sounds good. But this is where the sources really start flashing warning signs, isn't it? That big caveat.
Huge caveat. The extent of these benefits, how consistently they happen, it really seems to vary. And like we said, so much of the human data comes from studies on people with diagnosed deficiencies or specific conditions.
Right. So taking those findings and applying them directly to a healthy person looking to optimize is, well, it's a bit of a jump.
It's a significant leap. And it raises big questions about how effective or predictable they are in a generally healthy population, which naturally leads us straight into the potential downsides.
The risks. Because even if they're pitched as safer than synthetic HGH, they're not risk-free.
Absolutely not. Far from it. The sources list quite a few potential side effects.
What are the common ones people might experience?
Things like injection site reactions are pretty frequent, you know, redness, itching, swelling, sometimes pain right where you inject. Headaches can happen, nausea, sometimes just general stomach upset.
And what about that ghrelin mimicry with some of them, like GHRP6? Does that mean increased hunger?
It certainly can, yeah. Increased appetite is a known side effect, especially with GHRP6 because of that ghrelin link.
Okay, what else?
Some people report water retention, like mild swelling or bloating, though it's often described as transient, meaning it might pass. Fatigue or feeling lethargic can occur.
Yeah.
And sometimes tingling or numbness, that pins and needles feeling.
I saw carpal tunnel syndrome mentioned too, though maybe rarer.
Yes. Sources list it as rare and usually linked to higher doses. It's thought to be related to that fluid retention, potentially putting pressure on nerves in the wrist.
And more serious metabolic concerns.
Yeah, that's a big one. The potential impact on insulin sensitivity is something sources definitely raise, especially with longer-term use or higher doses. It could potentially lead to elevated blood glucose levels.
Which is obviously not good for metabolic health.
No. And then there's the most severe, though thankfully very rare, theoretical risk.
Acromegaly, like from too much growth hormone.
Acromegaly-like symptoms, yeah. It's considered much, much less likely than with abusing actual synthetic HGH. But the sources do warn that if someone used these peptides excessively long-term and managed to push their GH levels chronically way too high, well, theoretically, you could start seeing some overgrowth features, hands, feet, facial changes. It's remote, but it highlights the danger of overdoing it.
So physical side effects aside, there's this whole other layer of risk related to just getting these things right, the regulatory side.
Oh, that's absolutely critical. And maybe the biggest risk for many people. These compounds are generally not FDA approved for anti-aging or performance enhancement in healthy individuals.
So they're not like standard prescription drugs for those uses?
No, they often exist in this legal gray area. You see them sold online, often labeled as research chemicals or not for human consumption.
And the danger there is you don't know what you're getting.
Exactly. Purity, dosage, it's often completely unregulated. you have almost zero guarantee that what's in the vial matches the label, or that it's sterile, or that it doesn't contain harmful contaminants. That introduces a whole different set of health risks, totally separate from the peptide itself.
Which really connects to where you hear these conversations happening. You tune into certain podcasts or online communities focused on health optimization.
Right, like Huberman Lab, for example. Andrew Huberman often talks about peptides. But the emphasis is always heavily on understanding the underlying mechanisms, the complexity, the feedback loops in the body.
And on foundations first, right?
Absolutely. Sleep, nutrition, exercise. Get those dialed in perfectly before even thinking about advanced stuff like peptides. And if you do consider them, the message is crystal clear. It requires expert medical supervision to navigate those intricate hormonal systems safely and avoid unintended consequences. He discusses other peptides too, like BPC-157 for tissue repair, but the caution around hormone modulators like GHRPs is always high.
It's like build a solid foundation before you add the complex tech on top.
Precisely. Natural pathways first, advanced interventions only under strict, knowledgeable medical guidance.
Then you hear about them on shows like the Joe Rogan Experience, where biohacking and performance are common themes.
Yeah, and the vibe there is often more exploratory, more about sharing personal experiences, maybe guests talking about what they've tried. It's less of a deep scientific dive usually, but there's often an underlying acknowledgement of the, you know, Wild West nature of some of these compounds.
A sense of needing to do your own research, be careful.
Right. And ideally still involving a doctor. It reflects a user-driven interest, but also implicitly highlights the risks when you're operating outside established medical channels.
And then there are actual clinicians, like Dr. Craig Conover is sometimes mentioned, who do use some of these peptides, like sermorelin or CGC-1295, with patients.
Yes, but that's the key difference. It's in a clinical setting. His approach, as described in sources discussing his work, is highly personalized. It involves detailed blood work beforehand, looking at the patient's full history, and continuous monitoring during treatment.
So it's part of a supervised medical plan.
Exactly. He views them as potential tools, but only when sourced reliably through compounding pharmacies and used within a structured, medically overseen protocol. It's integrated into a wider strategy for addressing specific patient needs, maybe related to aging, recovery, metabolic health, but always, always under that strict medical guidance.
It's worlds away from just clicking buy now on some random website.
Completely different worlds. And it really emphasizes that point. These are powerful agents.
You know, what's really striking is how all these different perspectives, from the deep science focus to the exploratory user side to the clinicians actually using them, they all seem to land on the need for extreme caution and professional oversight.
It really underscores how complex manipulating these hormonal systems is. It's not something to be taken lightly at all.
Okay, so let's try to wrap this deep dive up. HGH peptides. They're definitely a fascinating area. There's potential there to stimulate your body's own growth hormone.
And with that, potentially achieve some sought-after benefits, muscle gain, fat loss, better recovery, maybe feeling more vital. There's some promising research, especially when used clinically for specific needs.
However, and it's a big however.
The potential side effects are real. Metabolic risks need careful consideration. We don't fully know the long-term consequences of using these for general enhancement. And maybe most importantly, the lack of regulation for general use means the stuff you buy outside of a prescription can be unreliable and potentially unsafe.
So the overwhelming message from the sources we looked at.
The responsible path, really the only safe path if you're considering this, is to have a thorough discussion with a qualified medical professional. Someone who really specializes in hormone health or peptide therapy.
They can actually assess your specific health situation, run the right tests.
Exactly. And if, and only if, it's deemed appropriate for you, they can guide you through a safe, monitored protocol using regulated compounds. There's a great analogy in one source.
The orchestra.
Yeah, the body's hormonal system is like a finely tuned orchestra. You really want a skilled conductor leading it, right? Not just grabbing random instruments online and hoping for the best.
That really paints a picture. Okay, that brings us to the end of this deep dive on HGH peptides. We genuinely hope this conversation has given you some clarity and maybe armed you with better knowledge to navigate this complex topic.
And as you think more about this, here's something to chew on. We see this potential to harness our own biology with compounds like these, but we also see these huge risks and regulatory hurdles. So the question is, how might future science and medicine bridge that gap? How do we get from powerful research chemicals to potentially safe, accessible tools for optimizing health, if that's even possible or desirable? Something to consider.
Definitely food for thought. Join us next time as we continue exploring the frontiers of human wellness.